Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
Drama on One is offered as a podcast at rte.ie/drama on one and, of course, here on RTE Radio 1 on Sunday nights. Tonight's play is Three Our Fathers by Carl O'Neill, a sinister triptych that mimics a hall of mirrors in which three masculine monologues draw parallel portraits: a suitor, a stalker, a spouse, of concave man obsessed with the opposite sex. Frank Laverty, Kevin Flood and Andrew Scott star as the trio of solitaires in Three Our Fathers by Carl O'Neill.
This rock will do. Oh, a rest at last. Oh, I think I've been walking for days. That last part. That hill. What's it called? Honister Pass. Oh, that was cruel, that was. Oh, and I think my knee's starting to act up again. Oh, God, I'm knackered. And the socks. Oh, that is such bliss. Oh, yes. Have to have a drink. Celebrate the climb. No. Empty. Booker. Oh, well. Have to fill up at the next stop. Mind, that was some view. A pretty picture. Back there, those two lakes. Buttermere. Crummock water. You can almost taste them. They'd be ribbon lakes now, wouldn't they? Think so. Never much good at the old geography. I'll give myself 20 minutes. Then I'll have to move on. Should have a couple of hours before dark anyway. Plenty of time to get to that hostel. A good feed. The old whiskers are coming on a bit now. Can't remember the last time I had a beard. Claire hated it, remember that. It'll be 10 days now, I suppose, since leaving. About that. It was tough. Harder than I'd wanted. Not to say goodbye to the kids. That was hard. Still, I did leave for them, didn't I? Yes. They won't understand why. Well, I could hardly tell them. That wouldn't be fair on any of us. I just hope they won't hate me for it. That's all.
He is my son.
I don't know how he found me out. His mother has been dead for years, since he was a child, and I'm sure she never told him. No one else knew, as far as I can tell. We were always so careful. Well, almost always. The foster parents would never have known of my existence, would they? And anyway, from the far side of America, all those years? No. No, I shouldn't think so. Some contact would have been made before this. They looked after him well, obviously, and he certainly grew up strong and handsome. I like to think he takes after me, but there's more of his maternal grandfather about him than anyone else. What a commanding figure that man was. I suppose he wasn't any more than 6 feet in height, but he seemed so much taller, with those broad, seafaring shoulders and that bronzed complexion. I was rather afraid of him, to be truthful. Although I only met him twice, once when he was home, a rare excursion for Christmas, and that first time at his wife's funeral. That was the first time I met Maureen. I was the chief celebrant at that funeral. "Your sermon was lovely, Father. Thank you so much," was all she said to me that day. But it was enough to turn my head. And what followed? Followed.
My dearest Ruth, you are probably wondering what this note is doing here. No, don't look for a signature. There isn't one. But you can probably guess who it is by the handwriting, can't you? I thought so. Yes, here I am, after all these years. What's that? How did I get in? Well, you know what they say. Old habits die hard. And I did so wish to see you. Never mind. Another time. Don't call me, I'll call you, okay? Oh, but of course you don't have my number. That's silly of me. Anyway, I'll be in touch. Sometime. And how are you keeping? Working hard? Well, you always did. I hear they've made you a partner now. Is that true? My, how far you've come since that summer of 91. Remember? Those pigtails, those old rubber gloves you always wore picking the fruit. The campfire flames invading your innocent blue eyes. And your cheeks flushed with colour as someone whispered in your ear. Yes, you've come a long way since then, haven't you? A lawyer now. Finally following in the old man's footsteps, huh? What a proud father he must be, good old Gerald. Haven't seen him in, God knows, when I last saw him. Oh, is that him in the picture near the fireplace? Yes, indeed it is. Older, yes. Greyer, yes. But those wily eyes of his still sparkling. Looks in good fettle, too. Has he been chasing any women lately? Now, don't get angry at me asking that. The man's only human, after all. And Millie's dead now, what, 7 years? He's far from past looking, if I know Gerald. Anyway, tell him I was asking for him, will you? I'm very fond of Gerald. Despite all that brouhaha over the accident. Still think he overreacted there. But that's all in the past. Not something any of us wants to remember, right? Especially yours truly.
I've always wanted to visit here. At school, one of my English teachers used to rhapsodise over the place. Used to quote Wordsworth to us. Bliss was it in that infant dawn, etc., etc. Bit of an eccentric. And we gave him a horrible time. Kids can be cruel. but I loved hearing him speak those wonderful sounding names. Oldswater, Ambleside, Derrentwater, Keswick. I often suggested to Claire that we come here, but always something came up. The kids were too young, Emily was sick, and now here I am on my own. This is not the way I wanted to see the Lake District. That mad New Zealand cyclist last night. I wonder if he did it. It couldn't be possible, could it? That last bit. Sean Kelly wouldn't have made it up that. And what about coming down? Sheer drop, almost. Madness. Mind, I didn't pass his corpse on the way up, so maybe he did make it. Or he's back down in one of those lakes there. I used to cycle a lot myself, when I was a kid. Got my first bike when I was 10. Well, it was for me and Anna. My sister Anna. 3 years older than me, 5 years younger than Johnny. Just the three of us. Well, there was a fourth, Katie, but she died in hospital. I never saw her. She'd be 25 now. Anna was the quiet one. The studious one. Full of brains. I used to do my homework in Anna's room. She used to give me spelling lessons. I before E, except after C. She didn't seem to have many friends. Although later we were told she was well liked at school. But she rarely brought anyone home. And didn't play outside much. Just stayed in her room, reading. That's what made it so strange, that she should want to go on that boat trip in the first place.
I've often wondered what strange force drove me towards her. At the time, I fooled myself into thinking I was only carrying out my ministry, caring for the sick and the bereaved. Brief visits, just glimpses, really, to see if everything was okay, to gaze at her once more. And when our father left for the sea again, I called by almost every day, ostensibly on my way back from the hospital. But I often didn't go near the hospital, just to stay longer with her. She enjoyed my visits, too, long before there was, well, anything between us. Sometimes I would accidentally bump into her on her way home from the factory where she worked. In my naivety, I didn't think she suspected mine were other than Christian motives. Later she was to say that she, too, longed for my visits. She said women felt more comfortable being alone with a priest than with other single men. Oh, how times have changed. Of course, I told her I couldn't be classed as being single. I was married to the church. But she just smiled at that in her inimitable, mocking way. What she said was true in those days. Women were less on their guard in the company of clergymen. They trusted them. It was a trust many of us found difficult to shoulder. We are only flesh and blood like everybody else. We possess no special reserves of willpower to control our... I almost said bestial urges. At least, I... personally, have no such reserves. I almost wish I had now. But it is too late for that. Far too late.
My brother, Johnny, used to take me fishing. I loved that. Just him and me, heading off in the early hours, no one around. Outside town, through the fields, a quarter mile below the bridge, down near the tree that dipped into the water. We called it the Hanging Tree, because we'd once found a lamb caught in its branches. There'd been a flood, and the poor thing had been washed away from its mother. We were closest then, me and Johnny. Hooking worms, casting a line, netting a catch, occasionally. I still see him the odd time, for a drink. But we never, you know, brothers. We never seem to get past the trivial, the surface of things. It's easier to talk to strangers. Johnny never married. Says he doesn't believe in it. That he likes to play the field. But I don't know. I reckon he'd have settled down with Lillian. We never found out what happened there. She just upped and left. Didn't hear a word from her. And Claire and she were very pally. Claire was very upset over that. One of the girls at work saw Lillian at the station, but they didn't speak. And Johnny won't open his mouth, of course. I was at home when the news came about Anna. Her teacher, Sister Monica, called to the house. Dressed in black, naturally. What else with news like that? It was a godsend she didn't suffer long, I remember her saying. Yes, sister. A godsend. That was the only time I ever heard my father crying. Not in front of us, but from upstairs. We could hear it coming through the ceiling. Can't describe that sound. It was frightening. The wail of a sick animal. But I didn't feel sorry for him. He didn't deserve my sympathy. Not after what happened that other time.
I suppose you're wondering how I found your house. It wasn't too difficult, really. Remember Greta had a break-in a couple of months ago? I presume she told you about that? How their place was given a good going over the night they went to the theatre to see Phantom, remember? She'd found two tickets in her bag of groceries one day. Oh, I knew she wouldn't turn down an opportunity like that. Not Greta. No going back to the supermarket to put up a notice. Found. Two tickets for theatre show. Would owner please ring? Etc, etc. Oh, no, not greedy Gretz. And off she went. No doubt clad in her best dead animal fur and wearing her favourite pearl necklace. How smug she must have looked. Until, that is, she and Ernst returned home and found... Imagine their faces then. Mind you, not all that much was taken, and most of that was no doubt insured, and they had a wonderful night out at the theatre. Things weren't all bad. Anyway, that's where I got your new address. Guess where? In their address book, would you believe? By the phone. Neat trick, that nearly fooled me, but I was equal to it. I was going to take the book itself, but I didn't want to draw attention to it. What common old garden burglar steals an address book, for God's sake? So I just scribbled down your address on the inside of Greta's fox fur, and I was gone in time to catch the last part of the show. I was sorry I missed the rest, but work is work. Speaking of which, I am back to my old ways, I'm afraid. Yes, I know I'm a bad boy, but my dear, one has to live, and it's so difficult these days. I mean, everything is so expensive, isn't it? I dread to think what you two are paying out every month for this place. 'Tis beautiful. I do commend your taste. Or is it his taste? No, I think not. You were always very fussy about where you wanted to live. My dear Ruth, I should know that, if anyone does. Funny, I passed by our old place a couple of weeks ago. It hasn't changed much, except that lazy Spanish couple have let the front lawn go completely wild. After all my hard work and tender care, I tell you, it took all my composure not to kick their door down and ram their rusty garden rake down their throats. But I didn't.
Why did I join the ministry? Would you believe I had a vision? Well, I exaggerate somewhat. Not a vision, then, but a calling. Yes, substantially that. I was 15 at the time. My parents and brothers were all absent from the house, and I was in the kitchen, just like now, sitting at the table, trying to complete an essay for my English class the next morning. It was early autumn, and dark storm clouds had gathered, blocking the light that had shortly before beamed through the window behind my head. I rose to switch on the light. As my arm stretched towards the switch, I felt something warm wrap itself around my hand, compressing my fingers and leading them wide of the light switch and towards a picture of the Sacred Heart above the door. I couldn't, or didn't, resist, and I followed as my fingers, still huddled together, climbed above the door and onto the picture, finally resting on the bleeding heart of Christ. My fingers pressed into the glass. I felt a burning sensation, and then I slipped, or fainted, I'm not sure which, and found myself stretched out on the wooden floor. I was very shaken, naturally, and it was some time before I could find the courage to approach anybody about what had happened. Perhaps I intuitively knew the significance of the event and was too scared to face up to it. In any case, I eventually called into the parochial house to share my anxiety with an old friend of the family, Father Paul. He was sceptical at first, but we agreed to meet regularly and to talk of the priesthood, its strengths and hardships. What Maureen, later dubbed, unfairly, his sales pitch, until I was convinced that I wanted to walk in the footsteps of Christ. That conviction, I can truthfully say, has never left me. I chose that path, and I have no regrets about doing so, whatever my faults along the way.
We were never a particularly affectionate family. We found it difficult to... Jesus, I even have difficulty saying it. Emotions were a problem with us. We weren't a very tactile bunch. I used to dread visits from more emotionally well-endowed relatives, like Aunt Catherine. She'd hug everybody, no one was safe. And she'd wear heavy makeup and bright red lipstick, which we couldn't rub off until she and Uncle Paddy had gone. By then, the mark had sunk in and needed Brillo pads to scrub it off. I've had a phobia about lipstick ever since. Claire just thinks I'm daft, but if she'd been wearing lipstick the night we met, especially bright red lipstick, I wouldn't have given her a second look. Perhaps that wouldn't have been such a bad thing. No, I don't mean that. She's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Her and the kids. But I was speaking about my other family, the first one. I never saw my parents kissing. Occasionally, yes, my father would return from the pub and throw his arm around her, but my mother would shrug him off with a not-in-front-of-the-children look. Not that his action was anything other than the drink-talking. My father's only genuine emotion was anger. We were used to beatings. But he was particularly hard on Johnny. Picked on him all the time. Usually over something trivial. Johnny left home as soon as he could, and by the time I reached my teens, Anna... Well, I did my homework on my own then.
I must say I'm very impressed with your back garden. And I know who's responsible for it, not you, although maybe you had a hand in the rockery at the far end. So he's got green fingers, this husband of yours. Or do you hire someone to do the dirty work for you? Do you? If so, you needn't have. I'd have gladly come round to put things in order. That's so important in a garden, for everything to be in order, don't you think? By the way, I took the liberty of changing around one or two bits and pieces out there. I hope you don't mind, but you will notice the difference. As for the position of the sundial, how the sun was going to get anywhere near it in that position, I don't know. Oh, and that piece of sharp slate you had on it instead of a proper pointer? Well, I've borrowed it. Is that all right? I need it for something, and it's exactly the right size, with a fine cutting edge. I'll return it as soon as I can.
Maureen was so much younger than I. No doubt that helped to allay any possible suspicion. But what, for so long, was there to arouse any comment? It was only natural for me to attend her house at that period. But I stepped up my other visits in the vicinity just in case. I think my popularity gained enormously as a result. People even said I was overworked, which I was. All priests are. But I felt as drawn to Maureen as to my ministry. And the inevitable happened less than 3 months after the funeral. A little incident triggered things off. Almost an accident, really, if there is such a thing as an accident. I was finishing off my usual cup of tea when she noticed the spits of rain on the window. She ran outside to the back garden to take the washing in from the line. When the rain began to pelt down, I went to assist her. In my awkward way, I let slip some garment or other, and we both reached for it and managed, in the process, to knock against each other, resulting in me stumbling backwards, arse over tip, as my father would have said, and landing on the wet grass, covered in Maureen's bras and panties and I don't know what. She laughed uproariously, and so did I. A laugh of consent, which we both recognised as such. The rest was pure passion, such as I'd never known and will never know again. It shall never fade from my memory, and I can make no suitable apology for it. How can I? It was the most beautiful experience of my life.
This husband of yours, Ruth, seems like a nice chap. No, I haven't met him, but I was talking to him today on the phone. This morning. He didn't know it was me, of course. I gave him a fictitious name. John L. Bird. J. L. Bird. Jail Bird. Get it? I arranged to meet him this afternoon to discuss the possibility of my transferring my considerable, though fledgling, company's account to his bank. As I write, he should be just about getting ready to receive me in his sweaty little office, massaging his sweaty little knuckles and smacking his sweaty little lips. And would you ever tell him to get rid of that ridiculous pencil moustache? Errol Flynn, he ain't. But I suppose you do love the little bugger, don't you? No doubt.
When my father had his heart attack, I was already living with Claire, and she was pregnant with Emily. I hadn't spoken to him for years, since leaving home. I couldn't explain it to Claire. I just said we'd had a row. My mother wrote sometimes, and we'd arranged to call round, provided he wasn't there. I think that's part of the reason I held off plans to get married. I didn't want him to be there. And my mother wouldn't have gone without him. The irony was that we'd decided, despite or because of Claire's pregnancy, to have a church wedding that summer. Maybe it was that that killed him. Heart attack was so massive he was dead in a matter of minutes. I have to confess, I was relieved. I dreaded the thought of a deathbed reconciliation. Emotional blackmail. In the years since then, and especially after my mother died, I've been able to think of some happier times with my father. Mainly when I was very young. Sitting on his shoulders, pulling at his beard, at the zoo, or at soccer matches. And once I remember him taking me and Johnny on a camping trip. The three of us. No women to bother us. I must have been about 7 or so, and toying with the idea of joining the Scots. Me joining anything, that's a good one. I did join them too, for about a week. But we didn't do anything exciting, just played idiotic games and spoke prayers. I'd already spent 3 nights in the wild with my father and Johnny, and they'd managed to keep from fighting. Sure, I'd seen it all. But that time is past, and all its aching joys are now no more. Anna. Emily.
I knew absolutely nothing of the pregnancy until after we had stopped meeting. It had been Maureen's decision to put an end to things. At first I resented her. I was hurt and couldn't understand what I had done to deserve such treatment. Knowing she was to have my child changed things, and yes, I admit that my actions were then irresponsible and cowardly. But what could I do? She understood my position. She even encouraged me to seek a transfer. When my request was turned down, she saw, as I did, that it was up to her to leave. I had little difficulty in finding her work in another town further south, nearly 100 miles away, and managed to arrange her accommodation. Within a few years of the boy's birth, she moved on again, this time despite my requests, and we ceased all contact.
I rang your office today too, Ruth, but they said you'd be tied up in court until 4. So disappointing. And I'm only in town for a few hours, and it may be a long, long time before we get a chance to meet again. Sad, isn't it, the way things turn out? But there it is. As the poet said, there will be time, there will be time to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. There will be time. I forget the rest. I wish I'd studied harder at school when I was there. I wish. But wishes don't come true, do they, Ruthie? Do wishes come true? I remember a wish we both had once upon a time. Once upon a time there was a moo cow coming down the road, and this moo cow that was down along the road met a nice'un's little boy named Baby Tuku. His father told him that story. His father.
20 years ago, I turned the black handle of a door. And ever since that day, I have felt contaminated, spoiled, diseased. I felt it, even if I didn't know. I didn't understand. I still don't understand. I don't know why it happened. I don't know why it happens. But that Saturday, something inside me died, and something else took root. I was 10 years old. I'd been playing football on the council pitches and came home muddied and exhausted. I was still in my boots, so I went round to the back door and proceeded to untie them, scraping off the caked mud with my fingers. I tiptoed into the kitchen in stockinged feet, setting my boots down on some newspaper on the floor. It was very quiet. I remembered my mother was to go to the hospital that afternoon to visit a friend. My father was to meet her there. It was safe to raid the biscuit tin. 4 Jaffa cakes and a glass of milk later, I was ready for a bath. I turned on the immersion and started up the stairs.
I never knew of her illness until one Christmas her father called at the presbytery in a distressed state. Apparently in a fever, Maureen had called out my name and asked for me. I searched the broken man's face to see evidence of anything more, but it was clear that only his daughter's health concerned him. He was in a desperate hurry to return to her side, and I accompanied him on what was an all-too-silent journey through the wet night. My fear of accusations disappeared when I saw her, and I almost broke down with the weight of my guilt. She looked so old and worn, the debilitation almost complete. I gave her a final blessing, but could do no more. She never regained consciousness and died some hours later.
My father used to tell me stories. Not from a book. None of that Hans Christian Andersen rubbish or grim fairy tales. He didn't read them from a book. That was cheating doing that. No, he'd simply make up a story as he went along. Sometimes he let me help him, and together we'd invent the most exciting stories all about real people, not gods and fairies. He didn't believe in any of that. Nobody turned into a frog, there were no princesses in towers, and when someone died, they stayed dead forever, just as in real life. I used to wish, there I go, wishing again. I used to wish that my father had written those stories down so that I could use them with my own children. But I think it was better that he didn't. They existed then, at that moment of time, and at no other. I should make up my own stories with my own children when the time came. But Ruthie, I'm still waiting. Waiting for my stories to be heard. Waiting for my children, for my child, for my son. I've been waiting for a long time. You know that. We waited together for 3 years. 3 years, Ruthie, before you realised you couldn't have a child. Oh, the agony you went through then when you found that out. The tears. And you wouldn't dream of adopting. No, you objected to it on moral grounds of some sort. I pleaded with you, didn't I? I went down on my knees. I lowered myself to that. But no. You couldn't really, Peter. I couldn't. Heartless, selfish bitch. Heartless, selfish bitch! And what happened then? The accident. The separation. The sentence. Not that living with you wasn't already a prison sentence. And prison's not like this. It's not a pretty place. You wouldn't like it, Ruthie. But prison ends. Life begins again. A new life. Which reminds me, I do believe that congratulations are in order. They tell me, these gossiping little birds, that you and Errol Flynn have become someone's mummy and daddy. How wonderful for you. Oh, I know I'm a tiny little bit late. What, 2 or 3 years, would you say? But my heartfelt good wishes are no less sincere, believe me. You do believe me, don't you? Although I really ought to be quite cross. I mean, how was I to know? Why didn't you tell me, for crying out loud? I'd have just showered a little dote with prezzies. And he is a little dote. Yes, he is. A trifle stubborn, perhaps, but quite a little dote. Little Joe. Now, you must excuse me, Ruthie. I have to pay a visit to the little boy's room.
When Maureen died, our son was then 9 years old. His grandfather refused, politely but firmly, my offer to contribute something towards the boy's education. He intended to rear his grandson himself. But he soon realized the boy's needs were more than he could provide, and, I suspect, he longed to return again to sea. As no other near relatives existed, he decided finally to approve of foster parents. I received a letter from him shortly afterwards, thanking me for my kindnesses and asking me to keep an eye on his grandson. But the old fears crept up on me again, and I kept my distance, sure in my own mind that the boy was being well cared for, and relieved that no connection could be traced between us that would give him cause for anxiety. And when I learned that the foster family had emigrated to America, I confess I breathed a sigh of relief, sure that our paths would never cross again. And now, this.
Our bedroom, Johnny's and mine, was nearest the top of the stairs. I wanted to get a comic to read in the bath, but I couldn't find the one I'd been reading. I thought I might have left it in Anna's room. Her door was closed. I could hear sounds coming from inside. Odd sounds. Like the bending of the bough of a tree. The black handle turned quietly in my fingers, and the door opened. Just a little. Enough. There was my sister. And there was my father. One of his hands was over her mouth, her eyes. And I did nothing. Nothing. I closed the door quietly and ran downstairs, picked up my boots and ran out of the house, leaving the back door open. Later, when I came home again, I said nothing. My mother was back. Anna was helping her make the tea. There was no sign of my father. I found my comic downstairs and had my bath.
I had just arrived back from hearing confessions. It was starting to rain. I came into the kitchen here and put on the kettle. I was beginning to slice some bread when I heard the living room door bang shut. "Is that you, Tom?" I called, thinking Father Coyne had popped in for a chat. There was no answer. A shadow appeared at the kitchen door. I turned and recognized him at once. His grandfather's physique and his mother's eyes. But undoubtedly, my son, too. He looked at me strangely, searching my face, which seemed to confirm his suspicions. "You are, aren't you?" he whispered, I believe half hoping he was mistaken. What could I say? I gave a slow nod. He reached into his pocket, and then I noticed the blade in his hand. I embraced it gladly. after he left, I had enough presence of mind to cover the dropped knife with my own fingerprints. I even tested to see if I could easily make the same wound in my stomach myself. But there is no more I can do now. My vision is cloudy, and I cannot keep awake. Libera me, Domine, de morte eterna.
There we are. Back again. Oh, the relief of it. So where were we? Oh, yes, I remember. The little doge. He wasn't at the creche, was he, Ruthie? His dear daddy was there earlier to collect him, wasn't he? Dear Errol? Or was he? Why isn't he here then? Perhaps he's gone to buy ice creams. Hmm? Do you think so? Do you think he's gone to buy ice creams for the little doge? I don't think so. Not the ice cream buying type, EF. Where can he be then? Perhaps it wasn't the dote's real daddy who stopped by to collect him. Think of that, eh, Ruthie? Another daddy. A better daddy. Do you think that's possible? A better daddy? Oh, I think so. I can think of someone not a million miles away from where you are now. What do you think of that? You see, Ruthie, only one man could ever be the father of your children, the fruit of your miraculous womb. It can be no other. You do understand? It does make sense. I am your true husband, Ruth. Where you go, I will go. Where you die, I will die. And there shall we be buried. And now, my dearest, I must rush. I have an urgent appointment far, far away. But don't worry, I'll be in touch. A biento, Ruthie.
I didn't know then what my father was doing. A boy of 10. I didn't know. But I knew he was hurting her. And I hated him for that. I always will. But I hate myself more. Because I see my father in me. Two weeks ago, I saw Emily naked. My daughter. I was passing by her room. She's 11 years old. And I was... Part of me wanted to step into that room and close the door. It wasn't the first time I'd felt that. And perhaps the next time. You see? I can't trust myself. I'm not a strong man. This last time, it was so close. Getting out. Running away is the only thing I can do. At least they'll be safe. Even though they won't know why. That's why I came here. To search for that something I lost all those years ago. Grandeur in the beatings of the heart.
That's it. Downhill now. Downhill from here on.
That was Three Our Fathers by Carl O'Neill, starring Frank Laverty, Kevin Flood and Andrew Scott. Sound supervision was by Anton Timoney. The producer was Aidan Matthews.
rte.ie/drama-on-one
Drama on One offers hundreds of plays for you to enjoy on our website, rte.ie/drama-on-one